riot, probably is the right term to say, a confrontation between the Jews and Gentiles at Caesarea. So Herod had palace there. Roman procurators had a palace there. A inscription mentioning Pontius Pilate was found there, was probably a part of the theater at Caesarea as well. A rather important city in Old Testament times was the city of Samaria, that became the capital of the northern kingdom, and that had had its ups and downs, but Herod the Great rebuilt that during his reign, and he named it Sebasta, which is Greek for Augustus, essentially. And Caesarea, named for Caesar, which is kind of becomes the whole family name eventually, but only Julius and Augustus at the time that Herod was around. And Sebasta then named even more explicitly for Augustus. Why he chose the Greek for it instead of the Latin Augustus, I don't know. And that was rebuilt for his army veterans, for Herod's army veterans. And the inhabitants of that were mostly Gentile. A third city in Palestine, Tiberias, named for another emperor. So you've got Julius, who made a shot at emperor and got killed, Augustus, who succeeded, and then his adopted son, I think a nephew or something, Tiberias. This city was built by Herod Antipas when he was made heir of the territory Galilee and Perea. And so he built it on the shore of the Sea of Galilee and named it in honor of Tiberius. The spelling is for the emperor I-U-S at the end and for the city I-A-S of Tiberius. That is actually pretty near where Jesus' ministry takes place, and yet there, as far as I know, there are no explicit references to him being in the city at any time. Besides Antipas, you remember one of the other heirs was Philip, and Philip got the area northeast of the Sea of Galilee here northeast, and so he built a city, and he called it Caesarea again, but for purposes of not confusing it with other Caesareas, some people in antiquity called it Caesarea Philippi, Philip's Caesarea, and that has stuck then for use in modern times. So to distinguish the two Caesareas, if it's nothing said, it's the earlier Caesarea that Herod built, or that's sometimes called Caesarea Maritima, a Caesarea on the sea, and the other one, Caesarea Philippi. It was built as a capital then for Herod's, Herod Philip's tetrarchy, so up in that territory and up pretty close to the headwaters of the Jordan River there. There are a number of decapolis cities, more than 10 at some times and less than 10 at other times. I just gave for my students 5 of them here, which show up now and then either in the New Testament or in Josephus' writing, Scythopolis, the city of the Scythians, so something about its history back several centuries. Hippos, named for horse, okay? Not sure what the exact reason for that is. Gadara, one of the alternative names that should come up in the Gadarene demoniacs things. Well, that's one of the passages we'll look at here later, so we'll say something about that. And Gerasa, one of the other names that show up for that. And then Philadelphia, name for Ptolemy Philadelphus, probably. City of Brotherly Love, as those of you who live in the East or live in Philadelphia area know it from Pennsylvania here. So those would be some of the Decapolis cities. Galilean towns, probably city would be pushing it a little bit. These are not at least fortified cities. Nazareth, where Jesus comes from, not named explicitly in the Old Testament, though there are these Netzer passages that we mentioned in connection with Messianic prophecy. Cana, Magdala, Capernaum, Chorazin, Bethsaida. Magdala, Capernaum, Chorazin, Bethsaida, all basically on the shore of the Sea of Galilee, and Cana and Nazareth back up in sort of the hill country of Galilee. Some Judean towns, besides Jerusalem, Jericho, certainly important in Old Testament times, and still important at New Testament times. There was an Old and a New Jericho. That's part of the explanation for how Jesus heals this particular blind man coming to one Jericho. You know, so coming to Jericho in Luke and leaving Jericho in Matthew and Mark. New Jericho was a snazzy place, and well-to-do people lived there, and that's probably where the tax collector Zacchaeus lived, and the other one was the more traditional city, and probably what Matthew, at least, perhaps would have thought of in terms of a Judean city. Bethany, across the Mount of Olives from Jerusalem. Bethlehem, south of Jerusalem, going out, actually heading out a little bit almost into the wilderness. And then Emmaus, there's some uncertainty on where the two are going to Emmaus, which of a couple of different locations that is, but general agreement, it's northwest of Bethlehem. So, cities of Palestine during the 1st century A.D., Jerusalem, the Jewish, what should we say, religious capital, Caesarea, the Roman capital, Sebaste, the Old Testament Samaria rebuilt for Herod's veterans, Tiberias, the capital of Galilee, Caesarea Philippi, the capital of the Tetrarchy of Philip, these Decapolis cities, Galilean towns, and Judean towns. A word or two about some major roads. to the best of my knowledge, we do not have names for these roads that come from New Testament times. So the names I'm going to use here for the three roads we're going to discuss are traditional names that are used in biblical studies, and some of these certainly come from earlier periods in the history of the region. The first of these, the name actually comes from a passage in Isaiah, I think it is, Via Maris, the way of the sea, which is a nice descriptive term. It was a coastal highway that came up not quite at the coast, but paralleled the coast and a few miles inland from Egypt, and then just south of the Carmel Ridge, it split, and one piece went up to the west and stayed on the coast and went on up then to Tyre, Sidon, etc., to Antioch eventually, up that direction. And the other one turned east at that point, went through, I think, the Megiddo Pass, and comes down to the Sea of Galilee, goes by Tiberias, and then goes on up and heads out to Damascus. So a major north-south coastal road, and certainly carried a good bit of trade traffic that did not go, say, by sea. Certainly a lot of trade traffic would have run up the coast and come in at a port or something and then perhaps been transshipped over. The second road I want to say a word or two about is kind of parallels this, but it's back across the Rift Valley and up on the Transjordan Plateau, and that had the name the King's Highway, and that goes back to who knows what king, but runs on the Transjordan Plateau and runs from the Gulf of Aqaba at the top of the, I guess we'd call it the Red Sea. And so goods shipped in from the south came up to the port there and then went overland up the King's Highway. And that went by some of the Decapolis cities and then angled over to Damascus as well. And both of those, the Via Maris and the King's Highway from Damascus, connected into roads that went up into the Mesopotamian Valley. The cities over there, Palmyra and such, then over to the west, over to the east, excuse me. A third road, probably rather more used by the Jews in connection with their travel back and forth from Galilee to Jerusalem, is the road that stayed in the along the ridge of the hill country, and so has the name that we use, Ridge Route. It was less important for international traffic because it was not as easy to travel along. It went up and down, and perhaps not as well paved, we might say, but was rather important, as I say, for pilgrims going from Jerusalem to Galilee, with one serious drawback, and that's it went through Samaria. So people going from the Jerusalem back home to Galilee or vice versa, coming down for festivals, might use it, but if they were edgy about the Samaritans or not in too much hurry, they might instead go down and go down into the Rift Valley and use a road there and then come back up again. And so we see both of those kinds of routes used in connection with people going to and from Jerusalem. So a quick tour of the three major roads. There were obviously a lot more roads. There were roads, obviously, that connected, from the Via Maris over to Jerusalem, and from Jerusalem over and down through across the Jordan and back up to the King's Highway. And there would be something similar to that at a couple of other places along the way. Lastly, under our discussion of geography of Palestine, is the Herodian fortifications. One of the reasons Herod is called Herod the Great is not because of his great personality, but because of his great building activities. And major structures around the Temple of Jerusalem are his. The major structures in Sebaste, in Caesarea, are his. Major structure at Hebron is his, okay? The patriarchal temple burial there of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, etc., are all Herod's. And he also built some fortifications. He was well aware that, one, he was not super popular with the Jews, but two, that the Roman Empire ended not too many miles to the east of him, and that there was a pretty strong nation, the Parthians, to the east there. And right at the beginning of his career, well, not quite the beginning, right before he became king of the Jews, the Parthians had invaded and had killed had captured and imprisoned his older brother. I think his Phasael was his older brother now. Slips my mind now. But Phasael committed suicide to avoid, I suppose, being tortured or something of that sort. Herod had gotten away, so Herod always has that in mind. And then somewhat later in his career, after he was king of the Jews but didn't feel terribly safe yet, there were still Cleopatra and Antony to worry about. And then even after all that was over, there were still possible rebellions to worry about. So he built himself a number of fortifications. He built himself a fortification at Machaerus, east of the Dead Sea. And this is a location where, according to Josephus, John the Baptist was put to death. John the Baptist was beheaded, presumably over there. The New Testament does not tell us where that took place. But that was in the territory of Herod Antipas, who was the Herod that put John to death. You remember, Herod the Great is gone by then. He had put the little babies to death in trying to get Jesus, but Herod Antipas had put John the Baptist to death. Then there was Masada on the west side of the Dead Sea, and Masada, I guess both Machaerus and Masada were not only fortifications, but they were palaces for Herod. So he wanted somewhere where he could retreat to and not have to give up at least all of his royal prerogatives while he was laying low to till the whatever revolt or whatever blew over on the west of the Dead Sea. And that has been pretty extensively excavated and has two palaces on it, one kind of up on top. It's a what we call a mesa, I guess, in southwestern American English. So a plateau with rather steep sides, the Dead Sea off to one side and various wadis coming down to the Dead Sea on the west side. And so he built a western palace on top, and then on the north end, down, kind of working its way down the slope so that it got some shade, there was his north palace, and some rather elaborate stuff still surviving there in recent excavations. So this was his palace, and then after he died, it fell into the hands of the Zealots during the Jewish revolt and this was in fact the place that they made their last stand against the Romans. The Romans had conquered Jerusalem in 70, but it wasn't until 73 that they felt they were ready to go and surround Masada and smoke them out, so to speak. And in fact, the zealots at Masada committed suicide rather than give up there. A third fortification of Herod is one called Herodium. So Herod modestly named it for himself. Here he took a hill southeast of Bethlehem and built up the top of it, so it actually looks a little like a volcano today, and put a palace in there. That was his retreat palace, and then down at the base of the hill he had a palace that he could use for, what shall we say, less dangerous situations. For many, many years, since Josephus, it's been understood that Herod's tomb was there, and I believe the evidence for that has been recently discovered, though I haven't heard how that's all settled out. No body of Herod or anything of that sort has been found there, but some structures that look like they might well be Herod's tomb have recently been found. Well, that's our tour of the geography of Israel, Palestine, if you like. We want to say a few words about the geography of Jerusalem. Some more detail on that. Here, we're going to divide our stuff up again into, first of all, what we might call the natural features, the valleys around Jerusalem and the hills around Jerusalem, and then look into the city walls, which we can still find some fairly good traces of some of them anyway, and then the various sections of the city, and then a few of the particular major buildings and structures and things that were there at Jesus' time. So, Jerusalem, up basically on the ridge of the hill country, surrounded by some valleys. Jerusalem was pretty easy to fortify in three directions, and not so easy on the north side. We have a valley running down the west side of Jerusalem and then across the bottom that's called the Hinnom Valley. This is a pretty deep valley, and became at one point a place where garbage was burned. And so the Hebrew Gay Hinnom, Valley of Hinnom, became a picture in Jewish thought of hell. So Gehenna, the term you will see in the New Testament now and again, unless your translation translates it away in some way, is this particular term. To the east of Jerusalem, there was another fairly deep valley called the Kidron Valley, and it's between the Temple and the Mount of Olives. So when Jesus does his triumphal entry into Jerusalem, he comes down the Mount of Olives and then back up to come into the probably the east gate of the temple complex. And so Kidron Valley would be the location at Gethsemane, though there's a couple of different suggestions for just where the Garden of Gethsemane was. There's a third valley, which is not nearly as noticeable today. Aerial photos taken near sunset, you get some hints of it. It was the valley in Josephus is called Tyropean, Cheesemaker's Valley. I'm not sure exactly what the Hebrew of it might have been, and I don't know that we've got a document that tells us that. It was between the Temple Mount on the east side of the city and the territory south of that where David had originally conquered Jerusalem and such, and the western part of Jerusalem where the upper city was and such. This valley is now pretty largely filled in, but there are some slight traces of it. So those are the valleys around Jerusalem. Jerusalem is also surrounded by hills. It's in hill country, and it's a hill country with lots of valleys and such. So a few of the important hills around Jerusalem. David, you remember, conquered the city from the Jebusites, And the Jebusite city had actually been a rather small city on a hill that is south of where the temple is now. And that was called the city of the Jebusites, and was also called Ophel. And again, I don't know for sure what the history of that name is. So the area south of the temple, but still up on this hill between the Kidron Valley to the east and the Tarapean Valley to the west, is Ophel. The hill on which the temple came to be built is Moriah, site of the temple, and apparently the site of Abraham's almost sacrifice of Isaac. Not quite as much certainty there, but some hints in that direction from the biblical material. There's the term Zion that also occurs in connection with Jerusalem, and that was probably originally either Ophel or Moriah, and comes to be kind of a generic term for the whole city. But then in medieval times, that comes to be applied to the western hill, the upper city, if you like. So if you talk about going to Mount Zion now, if you tell a taxi driver you want to go to Mount Zion, he's going to put you over there rather than at the Ophel or the temple site, if you like. A third hill is the Mount of Olives, outside the city, perhaps to the ridge about a half mile east from the city. It was at the edge of the wilderness, so up on the top of Mount of Olives you can look out and see the wilderness to the west of you, to the east of you, and the much more vegetated area to the west of you. it was on the way from Jericho to Jerusalem, so the road would come over the Mount of Olives there, site of Jesus' ascension. The hill of the upper city is west of the Ophel across the Cheesemaker's Valley, and higher than Ophel or Moriah. So if you stand on the Mount of Olives and take a picture looking west across the city, you can see this territory standing higher there. As I say, that was called Zion in the Middle Ages, but probably misidentified. So that's the hills and the valleys around Jerusalem. The next thing we might mention here is the city walls at the New Testament times. And some of these walls still stand or have walls built on the same general lines, same foundations as they do. And the walls roughly follow these valleys on the, you know, so as to make it, when a person attacks a city, they got to go down the valley and then up to the wall, and rather difficult to get into the place. So the south wall is generally taken to run around the where the Kidron and the Kidron and the Hinnom Valley run together, and so it kind of encloses the Tarapean Valley in the city. So that's the south wall around this way, with the Hinnom Valley over here and the Kidron coming down here. The east wall on the okay, get the Kidron Valley over here on the east side of the city. Here's the city, Kidron Valley here, and the east wall is up the slopes of the Kidron Valley and along the east side of the temple. The west wall on the Hinnom Valley, but on the east side of it, that is on the city side of the Hinnom Valley. And so those walls go back, I think, probably as far back as the bigger city has existed, so probably from shortly after Solomon's time or something of that, though doubtless they've been rebuilt on several occasions. The north side of the city, though, didn't really have any good valley protecting it, and so over the history they have built several walls going out further as the city has expanded. The first north wall basically ran from the temple up north a little bit, and then swung back around and came back over and met the Hinnom Valley, down near what we call the Joppa Gate, I guess. The second north wall then was apparently built after the, not looking at my map properly. The first north wall just basically ran east from the Joppa Gate right over to the temple. The second north wall ran out from there and then went north and then came back around and came back to the temple. So it enclosed a little bit bigger area on the north side of the city. And then the third north wall was not there at Jesus' time. So the territory that it enclosed was suburb, I guess you would use the term there, though it doesn't have the same flavor it did in does today. It began after Jesus' ministry, begun by Herod Agrippa, and then when the Roman emperor said, cut that out, he stopped, and it was finished during the revolt then in 66 to 70 A.D. It ran north from the east side of the temple up the Kidron Valley for a ways and then swung around and came back down to the Joppa Gate. So three north walls. These sets of walls then divided the city into sections. Down here south of the temple is the old city of David, the territory he conquered, the old Jebusite city, and it's basically on Ophel Hill. Then there's the Temple Mount north of that, and that was built by Solomon, and it's on Mount Moriah. Then there's the lower city, and there's some disagreement by mapmakers on just where to put that, but I go along with what appears to be the majority of them, and that is the Tyropian Valley, so west of Ophel, and before you get up onto the upper western part of the city, the upper city, the lower city. Upper city, this hill that runs, here's the Tyropian Valley, it's over here to the west of it, and then the Hinnom Valley is over here, so it's up in that particular region, the upper city. There are a couple other pieces to the city. There's the territory called the Second Quarter, which is between the first and second city walls, and then finally what was called New City or Bezetha, which was between the second and third walls. So these would both be extensions out to the north of the city. some major buildings and structures from the New Testament period. We have, first of all, the temple complex. The temple we generally think of as the building, but there was also a large platform it was built on. When Herod the Great, at least, thought in terms of refurbishing the temple about 20 B.C., he realized that because the land fell off like it did around the around that hill, Moriah, it would be necessary to build what he wanted to extend that. And so he took what was perhaps initially a 500-cubit square, probably left over from Solomon's temple, but at least standing at the second temple, and extended that some significant difference distance to the south. And then we get a kind of longer rectangle. And at the outer edge of this platform, if you like, or a terrace, if you like, you've actually got a pretty long drop-off to the bottom of the Tyropian Valley on one side and the Kidron Valley to the other side. on top of this platform, then, the temple stood in the, not exact middle, but roughly middle, and there was a open porchway with a roof on it around three sides, two sides anyway. The south side was called the Royal Portico, and the east side, Solomon's Portico. Solomon's Portico indicates, I think, that probably Solomon had something there in the original temple, though the material we've got now is later than that. And the Royal Portico, probably built by Herod, but the name suggests that the followers did not want to advertise Herod or something of that sort. In any case, that's the temple building. So a platform with the courts, the outer court of the Gentiles, and then the main court being the court of the women, and then inside that you come up a stairway, and there's a very narrow court of the men where they could stand and put their hands on the animals as they were sacrificed, and then the bigger court of the priests, and then back in that the court, the temple complex itself. The platform was probably about 750 feet east-west, that is about 500 cubits, and about twice that north-south. So Herod had substantially increased the size of the temple platform from what we get as the traditional size that shows up in rabbinic literature. Just north and west of the temple, and actually adjoining it, is the Fortress Antonia, and that rebuilt at least by Herod. And by New Testament times, that was being used as the place where the Roman garrison kept an eye on things, because temple festivals sometimes developed into riots of one sort or another due to dissatisfaction, perhaps of some of the worshippers with the Romans or something of that sort. The Romans wanted to be right there to be able to do anything. Traditionally, the Fortress Antonia is the site of Jesus' Roman trial, though a number of people now think perhaps it was over at Herod's palace, which we'll say a word about here in a moment. The West Gate, out of the city of Jerusalem, and where a road then ran off to Jaffa, or Joppa, was called the Jaffa Gate, and there were three big towers for defensive purposes built there at that gate. One was named for Herod's brother Phasael, who had died in the Parthian invasion. One was named for Herod's, what should we say, favorite wife, Mariamne, who, in spite of which, he put to death. And one named for a friend of his, Hippicus. So, Jaffa Gate Towers. One of those towers, the lower parts are still surviving, and you can actually visit and view that when you're at Jerusalem. Just south of the Jaffa Gate Towers is Herod's palace, built by Herod the Great, so obviously with Herod off the scene. This is probably used by the Roman governor when he was in the city, rather than by Herod Antipas, who, after all, didn't have quite the, what should we say, political standing that the Roman governor had. And that's the alternate site for the Roman trial. So if Pilate was down here, then that's where it was, because we're told Pilate came out and went back in, etc. Or if it was being used for some other reason at the festival, for instance, Pilate might have felt safer in the Antonia fortress than would be the Antonia. Whatever, those are the two candidates for that. There was a Sanhedrin building, and we think it was near the temple and on the platform somewhere, but we do not now know where it was. The rabbinic literature calls it the Hall of Hewn Stones, and this is probably the site of Jesus' condemnation on Friday morning before they take him to try and get Pilate to validate their sentence. The model of Jerusalem at the Holy Land Hotel also attempts to place a chariot racing stadium called Hippodrome in Greek, horse run. Okay, and if you've ever seen the film Ben-Hur, they have a very authentic looking hippodrome, long straightaways with sharp turns on either end. So instead of being a nice big oval, as say horse racing places are in Western culture, they're a long straightaway and then a sharp turn and a long straightaway, etc. And I refer you to Ben-Hur for that particular thing. The location is uncertain, but some put it in the Tyropian Valley. That's where this particular model puts it. Josephus also tells us there was a theater in Jerusalem. So both those features would have been much more Hellenistic. They certainly weren't traditional Jewish sorts of things, and the location of that is uncertain. Most of us, when we think of a theater, either think of a movie theater, or perhaps we think of something like Shakespeare's Globe Theater or something of that sort. The Greek and Roman theaters, particularly the Greek theaters, were a kind of a half circle, often cut into the side of a hill, and with stone, I guess, though they may well have used concrete as well, bleachers, we would say, around, going up higher and higher with various aisles running down along them. So that actual model has been used even into the 20th century for theaters and various kinds of stadiums as well. That would probably have been used to perform plays of one sort or another. We're told by some of your Jewish writers that some of the Hellenistic Jews had in fact constructed plays about Ezekiel and that sort of thing, so that there were some what we might think of as religious plays rather than just the pagan Greek plays and the very lewd Roman plays around. Some other sites related to Jesus' ministry, the Pool of Bethesda. You remember in John 5 that Jesus finds a lame person at the Pool of Bethesda, and the tradition is at least that he was waiting for the moving of the water, etc. And I don't think the best text of John 5 supports the tradition, but appears that at least somebody, perhaps a marginal note or something, had entered a note about that. And certainly the narrative of John 5 indicates that that the lame guy had some such thing in mind. And we're told of this a pool that had five porticos. Portico, the term for these covered porches, usually with columns on either side to hold up the roof. And lo and behold, just north of the temple and northeast of the Antonia Fortress, they have found, buried pretty deeply at this point with the rubble over the centuries, but now dug out, a pool that had four porchways around the outside and one across the middle, dividing it into two pools. And so the general belief is that is the Pool of Bethesda, where this particular place that Jesus healed the lame man took place. There's another pool in the mystery, Jesus, and that's the Pool of Siloam, where Jesus sent the fellow who's blind. You remember he made clay and put it on the blind man's eyes. And the Pool of Siloam has been known for a long, long time where it is. It's south of the temple, kind of south, slightly west of the temple in the Tyropean Valley, right down where the near the south end of the city where the Tyropean and Hinnom come together. And that has been excavated also and is narrated for us in John 9. Some other places, the Upper Room, where the Last Supper was held. Well, there's a traditional site of the Upper Room, and it's a second floor, but the problem is, from Josephus' descriptions, there does not appear to have been any second floors left after the Romans were finished with Jerusalem in 70 AD. So it might be near the site. Hard to say, but that's the traditional one. If you're in Jerusalem as a tourist, they'll take you to that. The architecture there is what I would call, as a non-architect, Gothic or something like that. So it's a Crusader period, clearly. Caiaphas' house, a place where Jesus was taken for perhaps a preliminary hearing of some sort, possibly with a part or maybe even all of Sanhedrin there. That's traditionally in the upper city, and a site is shown for that, even a little cave where Jesus is claimed to have been held as a prisoner overnight. I don't know what to say about that. It was a shrine of some sort of Christians a few centuries later, but whether they've got the right site is somewhat hard to be sure of. Gethsemane, we know, is an olive grove in the Kidron Valley on the slopes of the Mount of Olives. There are several sites claimed by various religious groups. That brings us last of all to Calvary or Golgotha. There are three sites I'm aware of now claimed, up from two when I first taught this course. the traditional one is the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, and that may very well be authentic, but it certainly doesn't look very authentic anymore. It's had a church built over it for probably 1,500 years at least, and is the most widely recognized and has been recognized since the time of Constantine. And they show you a place where Calvary was and a place where the tomb was and that sort of thing. And for at least Western Christians, it looks way too ornate and such, kind of turns you off. There's Gordon's Calvary, a site that I guess that was the general Charles Gordon suggested, that probably looks more like what Calvary looked like in Jesus' time, but the evidence is rather strong against Historisti. The tomb there is not a new tomb, which is what the Gospels tell us the tomb of Joseph Arimathea was. But this tomb appears to go back to Iron Age period, so several centuries old by New Testament times. Ernest Martin, who has done a number of things in suggesting a date for the birth of Christ that's fairly close to the traditional date, but not very close to the date that's been used the last few centuries of 4 or 5 B.C., but he goes with like 1 B.C., 2 B.C., actually, has also suggested a site for the Mount of Olives. He basically claims that somehow the centurion standing on the Mount of Mount Calvary was able to see the curtain ripped in half. As I read the text over, it doesn't look like that's necessary to the text, though perhaps you could read it that way. And so he puts it east of Jerusalem, so in the direction where the temple actually faced, and puts it on the Mount of Olives. He puts it near the site of the slaughtering of the red heifer, citing so typological reasons as well as historical reasons. So that's his suggestion. Well, that's a quick tour. There's lots and lots more that can be said, and I hear that Ted has got some good stuff up on the geography and archaeology and such of Jerusalem and Palestine, so I refer you to those here. But this is what I have in my Synoptic Gospels course. Thank you very much for your attention.